Chapter 6 Dark Prophecy. The farmhouse door shook under furious blows from outside. The heavy bar across the door jumped in its brackets. Beyond the window next to the door moved the heavy muzzled silhouette of a trolloc. There were windows everywhere, and more shadowy shapes outside. Not shadowy enough, though. Rand could still make them out.
The windows, he thought desperately.
He backed away from the door, clutching his sword before him in both hands.
Even if the door holds, they can break in the windows. Why aren't they trying the windows?
With a deafening metallic screech, one of the brackets pulled partly away from the doorframe, hanging loose on nails ripped a finger's width out of the wood. The bar quivered from another blow, and the nails squealed again.
We have to stop them, Rand shouted.
Only we can't. We can't stop them.
He looked around for a way to run, but there was only the one door. The room was a box. Only one door and so many windows.
We have to do something. Something. It's too late, Matt said. Don't you understand?
His grin looked odd on a bloodless pale face, and the hilt of a dagger stood out from his chest, the ruby that capped it blazing as if it held fire. The gem had more life than his face.
It's too late for us to change anything.
I've finally gotten rid of them, Perrin said, laughing.
Blood streamed down his face like a flood of tears from his empty sockets. He held out red hands, trying to make Rand look at what he held.
I'm free now. It's over.
It's never over, Althor,
Potunfane cried, capering in the middle of the floor.
The battle's never done.
The door exploded in splinters and Rand ducked away from the flying shards of wood. Two red-clad Aes Sedai stepped through, bowing their master in. A mask the color of dried blood covered Baalzaman's face, but Rand could see the flames of his eyes through the eye slits. He could hear the roaring fires of Baalzaman's mouth.
It is not yet done between us, Althor, Baalzaman said,
and he and Fane spoke together as one.
For you, the battle is never done.
With a strangled gasp, Rand sat up on the floor, clawing his way awake. It seemed he could still hear Fane's voice, as sharp as if the peddler were standing beside him.
It's never over. The battle's never done.
Bleary-eyed, he looked around to convince himself that he was still hidden away where Egwene had left him, bedded down on a pallet in a corner of her room. The dim light of a single lamp suffused the room, and he was surprised to see Nynaeve, knitting in a rocking chair on the other side of the lone bed, its covers still in place. It was night outside. Dark-eyed and slender, Nynaeve wore her hair in a fat braid, pulled over one shoulder and hanging almost to her waist. She had not given up on home. Her face was calm, and she seemed aware of nothing except her knitting as she rocked gently. The steady click-click of her knitting needles was the only sound. The rug silenced the rocking chair. There had been nights of late when he had wished for a carpet on the cold stone floor of his room, but in Shinar, men's rooms were always bare and stark. The walls here had two tapestries, mountain scenes with waterfalls, and flower-embroidered curtains alongside the arrow slits. Cut flowers, white morning stars, stood in a flat round vase on the table by the bed, and more knotted in glazed white sconces on the walls. A tall mirror stood in a corner, and another hung over the washstand, with its blue-striped pitcher and bowl. He wondered why Egwene needed two mirrors. There was none in his room, and he did not miss it. There was only one lamp lit, but four more stood around the room, which was nearly as large as the one he shared with Matt and Perrin. Egwene had it alone. Without looking up, Nynaeve said, "If you sleep in the afternoon, you can't expect to sleep at night." He frowned, though she could not see it. At least, he thought she could not. She was only a few years older than he, but being wisdom added 50 years of authority.
I needed a place to hide and I was tired, he said, then quickly added, I didn't just come here. Egwene invited me into the women's apartments.
Nynaeve lowered her knitting and gave him an amused smile. She was a pretty woman. That was something he would never have noticed back home. One just did not think of a wisdom that way.
The light helped me, Rand. You are becoming more Shinaran every day. invited into the women's apartments, indeed. She sniffed. Any day now you'll start talking about your honor and asking peace to favor your sword. He colored and hoped she did not notice in the dim light. She eyed his sword, its hilt sticking out of the long bundle beside him on the floor. He knew she did not approve of the sword, of any sword, but she said nothing about it for once. Egwene told me why you need a place to hide. Don't worry, we'll keep you hidden from the Ammerlin, or from any other Aes Sedai, if that is what you want. She met his eyes and jerked hers away, but not before he saw her uneasiness, her doubt. That's right, I can channel the power. A man wielding the one power. You ought to be helping the Aes Sedai hunt me down and gentle me. Scowling, he straightened the leather jerkin Egwene had found for him and twisted around so he could lean back against the wall. As soon as I can, I will hide in a cart or sneak out. You won't have to hide me long. Nynaeve did not say anything. She fixed on her knitting, making an angry sound when she dropped a stitch. Where is Egwene? She let the knitting fall onto her lap. I don't know why I am even trying tonight. I can't keep track of my stitches for some reason. She has gone down to see Padan Fane. She thinks seeing faces he knows might help him. Mine certainly did not. She ought to stay away from him. He's dangerous. She wants to help him, Nynaeve said calmly. Remember, she was training to be my assistant, and being a wisdom is not all predicting the weather. Healing is part of it, too. Egwene has the desire to heal, the need to. And if Padan Fane is so dangerous, Moiraine would have said something. He barked a laugh. You didn't ask her. Egwene admitted it, and I can just see you asking permission for anything. Her raised eyebrow wiped the laugh off his face. He refused to apologize, though. They were a long way from home, and he did not see how she could go on being Wisdom of Emmons Field if she was going to Tar Valon. Have they started to search for me yet? Egwene is not sure they will, but Lance says the Ammerlin Seed is here because of me, and I think I'll take his opinion over hers. For a moment, Nynaeve did not answer. Instead, she fussed with her skeins of yarn. Finally, she said, I am not sure. One of the serving women came a little while ago, to turn down the bed, she said, as if Egwene would be going to sleep already, with the feast for the Ammerlin tonight. I sent her away. She didn't see you. Nobody turns your bed down for you in the men's quarters. She gave him a level look, one that would have set him stammering a year ago. He shook his head. They wouldn't use the maids to look for me, Nynaeve. When I went to the buttery for a cup of milk earlier, there were too many women in the halls. Those who are attending the feast should have been getting dressed, and the others should either have been helping them or getting ready to serve. Or to... She frowned worriedly. There's more than enough work for everybody with the Ammerlin here, and they were not just here in the women's apartments. I saw the Lady Amalisa herself coming out of a storeroom near the buttery with her face all over dust. That's ridiculous. Why would she be a part of a search? Or any of the women, for that matter. They'd be using Lord Agamar's soldiers, and the warders, and the Aes Sedai. They must just be doing something for the feast. Burn me if I know what a Shinaran feast takes. You are a woolhead sometimes, Rand. The men I saw didn't know what the women were doing either. I heard some of them complaining about having to do all the work by themselves. I know it makes no sense that they were looking for you. None of the Aes Sedai seemed to be taking any interest. But Amalisa was not readying herself for the feast by dirtying her dress in a storeroom. They were looking for something, something important. Even if she began right after I saw her, she would barely have time to bathe and change. Speaking of which, if Egwene doesn't come back soon, she'll have to choose between changing and being late. For the first time he realized that Nynaeve was not wearing the Two Rivers woolens he was used to. Her dress was pale blue silk, embroidered in snowdrop blossoms around the neck and down the sleeves. Each blossom centered on a small pearl, and her belt was tooled in silver with a silver buckle set with pearls. He had never seen her in anything like that. Even feast day clothes back home might not match it. You're going to the feast? Of course. Even if Moiraine had not said I should, I would never let her think I was... Her eyes lit up fiercely for a moment, and he knew what she meant. Nynaeve would never let anyone think she was afraid, even if she was. Certainly not Moraine, and especially not Lan. He hoped she did not know he was aware of her feelings for the warder. After a moment, her gaze softened as it fell on the sleeve of her dress.
"The Lady Amalisa gave me this," she said so softly he wondered if she was speaking to herself.
She stroked the silk with her fingers, outlining the embroidered flowers, smiling, lost in thought.
"It's very pretty on you, Nynaeve. You're pretty tonight."
He winced as soon as he said it. Any wisdom was touchy about her authority, but Nynaeve was touchier than most. The women's circle back home had always looked over her shoulder because she was young, and maybe because she was pretty, and her fights with the mayor and the village council had been the stuff of stories. She jerked her hand away from the embroidery and glared at him, brows lowering. He spoke quickly to forestall her.
"They can't keep the gates barred forever. Once they are opened, I will be gone and the Aes Sedai will never find me. Perrin says there are places in the Black Hills and the Carling grass. You can go for days without seeing a soul. Maybe I can figure out what to do about—"
He shrugged uncomfortably. There was no need to say it, not to her.
"And if I can't, there'll be no one to hurt."
Nynaeve was silent for a moment, then she said slowly,
"I am not so sure, Rand. I can't say you look like more than another village boy to me, but Moraine insists you are Taviran, and I don't think she believes the wheel is finished with you. The Dark One seems—"
"Shaitan is dead," he said harshly,
and abruptly the room seemed to lurch. He grabbed his head as waves of dizziness sloshed through him.
"You fool! You pure, blind, idiotic fool! Naming the Dark One? Bringing his attention down on you? Don't you have enough trouble?"
"He's dead," Rand muttered, rubbing his head. He swallowed. The dizziness was already fading.
"All right, all right. Balzamon, if you want, but he's dead. I saw him die, saw him burn.
And I wasn't watching you when the Dark One's eye fell on you just now?
Don't tell me you felt nothing, or I'll box your ears. I saw your face."
"He's dead," Rand insisted.
The unseen watcher flashed through his head and the wind on the tower top. He shivered.
"Strange things happen this close to the Blight." "You are a fool, Randall Thor."
She shook a fist at him.
"I would box your ears for you if I thought it would knock any sense."
The rest of her words were swallowed as bells crashed out, ringing all over the keep.
He bounded to his feet.
"That's an alarm. They're searching."
"Name the Dark One, and his evil comes down on you." Nynaeve stood more slowly, shaking her head uneasily.
"No, I don't think so. If they are searching for you, all the bells do is warn you. No, if it's an alarm, it is not for you."
"Then what?"
He hurried to the nearest arrow slit and peered out. Lights darted through the night-cloaked keep like fireflies, lamps and torches dashing here and there. Some went to the outer walls and towers, but most of those that he could see milled through the garden below and the one courtyard he could just glimpse part of. Whatever had caused the alarm was inside the keep. The bells fell silent, unmasking the shouts of men, but he could not make out what they were calling.
"If it isn't for me..."
"Egwene," he said suddenly.
"If he's still alive, if there's any evil, it's supposed to come to me."
Nynaeve turned from looking through another arrow slit.
"What? Egwene!"
He crossed the room in quick strides and snatched his sword and scabbard free of the bundle.
"Light, it's supposed to hurt me, not her. She's in the dungeon with Thane. What if he's loose somehow?"
She caught him at the door, grabbing his arm. She was not as tall as his shoulder, but she held on like iron.
"Don't be a worse goat-brained fool than you've already been, Randall Thor. The women are looking for something. Lightman, this is the women's apartments. There will be Aes Sedai out there in the halls, likely as not. Egwene will be all right. She was going to take Matt and Perrin with her. Even if she met trouble, they would look after her. What if she couldn't find them, Nynaeve? Egwene would never let that stop her. She would go alone, the same as you, and you know it. Light, I told her Fane is dangerous. Burn me, I told her."
Pulling free, he jerked open the door and dashed out.
"Light, burn me. It's supposed to hurt me."
A woman screamed at the sight of him, in a laborer's coarse shirt and jerkin with a sword in his hand. Even invited men did not go armed in the women's apartments unless the keep was under attack. Women filled the corridor, serving women in the black and gold, ladies of the keep in silks and laces, women in embroidered shawls with long fringes, all talking loudly at the same time, all demanding to know what was happening. Crying children clung to skirts everywhere. He plunged through them, dodging where he could, muttering apologies to those he shouldered aside, trying to ignore their startled stares. One of the women in a shawl turned to go back into her room, and he saw the back of her shawl, saw the gleaming white teardrop in the middle of her back. Suddenly he recognized faces he had seen in the outer courtyard. Aes Sedai staring at him in alarm now.
"Who are you? What are you doing here? Is the keep under attack? Answer me, man!"
"He's no soldier. Who is he? What's happening?"
"It's the young Southland lord.
Someone stop him!"
Fear pushed his lips back, baring his teeth, but he kept moving and tried to move faster. Then a woman came out into the hall, face to face with him, and he stopped in spite of himself. He recognized that face above the rest. He thought he would remember it if he lived forever. The Amarlin Seat. Her eyes widened at the sight of him, and she started back. Another Aes Sedai, the tall woman he had seen with the staff, put herself between him and the Amarlin, shouting something at him that he could not make out over the increasing babble.
"She knows. Light help me, she knows. Moraine told her."
Snarling, he ran on.
"Light, just let me make sure Egwene's safe before they—"
He heard shouting behind him, but he did not listen. There was enough turmoil around him out in the keep. Men running for the courtyards with swords in hand, never looking at him. Over the clamor of alarm bells, he could make out other noises now. Shouts, screams, metal ringing on metal. He had just time to realize that they were the sounds of battle.
Fighting? Inside Valdara?
When three Trollocs came dashing around a corner in front of him. Hairy snouts distorted otherwise human faces, and one of them had ram's horns. They bared teeth, raising scythe-like swords as they sped toward him. The hallway that had been full of running men a moment before was empty now except for the three Trollocs and himself. Caught by surprise, he unsheathed his sword awkwardly, tried Hummingbird Kisses the Honey Rose. Shaken at finding Trollocs in the heart of Faldara Keep, he did the form so badly, Lan would have stalked off in disgust. A bear-snouted Trolloc evaded it easily, bumping the other two off stride for just an instant. Suddenly, there were a dozen Shinarans rushing past him at the Trollocs, men half-dressed in finery for the feast, but swords at the ready. The bear-snouted Trolloc snarled as it died, and its companions ran, pursued by shouting men waving steel. Shouts and screams filled the air from everywhere.
"Egwene!"
Rand turned deeper into the keep, running down halls empty of life, though now and again a dead Trolloc lay on the floor, or a dead man. Then he came to a crossing of corridors, and to his left was the tail end of a fight. Six top-knotted men lay bleeding and still, and a seventh was dying. The murderall gave its sword an extra twist as it pulled the blade free of the man's belly, and the soldier screamed as he dropped his sword and fell. The fade moved with viperous grace, the serpent illusion heightened by the armor of black overlapping plates that covered its chest. It turned, and that pale, eyeless face studied Rand. It started toward him, smiling a bloodless smile, not hurrying. It had no need to hurry for one man alone. He felt rooted where he stood, his tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth. The look of the eyeless is fear. That was what they said along the border. His hands shook as he raised his sword. He never even thought of assuming the void.
"Light had just killed seven armed soldiers together. Light, what am I going to do? Light!"
Abruptly, the murderall stopped, its smile gone.
"This one is mine, Rand."
Rand gave a start as Ingtar stepped up beside him, dark and stocky in a yellow feast day coat, sword held in both hands. Ingtar's dark eyes never left the Fade's face. If the Shinaran felt the fear of that gaze, he gave no sign.
"Try yourself on a Trolloc or two," he said softly, "before you face one of these."
"I was coming down to see if Egwene is safe. She was going to the dungeon to visit Fane and—"
"Then go see to her."
Rand swallowed.
"We'll take it together, Ingtar. You aren't ready for this. Go see to your girl. Go! You want Trollocs to find her unprotected?"
For a moment, Rand hung there, undecided. The Fade had raised its sword for Ingtar. A silent snarl twisted Ingtar's mouth, but Rand knew it was not fear. And Egwene could be alone in the dungeon with Fane, or worse. Still, he felt ashamed as he ran for the stairs that led underground. He knew a Fade's look could make any man afraid, but Ingtar had conquered the dread. His stomach still felt knotted. The corridors beneath the keep were silent and feebly lit by flickering, far-spaced lamps on the walls. He slowed as he came closer to the dungeons, creeping as silently as he could on his toes. The grate of his boots on the bare stone seemed to fill his ears. The door to the dungeons stood cracked open a handbreadth. It should have been closed and bolted. Staring at the door, he tried to swallow and could not. He opened his mouth to call out, then shut it again quickly. If Egwene was in there and in trouble, shouting would only warn whoever was endangering her. Or whatever. Taking a deep breath, he set himself. In one motion, he pushed the door wide open with the scabbard in his left hand and threw himself into the dungeon, tucking his shoulder under to roll through the straw covering the floor and come to his feet, spinning this way and that too quickly to get a clear picture of the room, looking desperately for anyone who might attack him, looking for Egwene. There was no one there. His eyes fell on the table, and he stopped dead. Breath and even thought freezing. On either side of the still-burning lamp, as if to make a centerpiece, sat the heads of the guards in two pools of blood. Their eyes stared at him, wide with fear, and their mouths gaped in a last scream no one could hear. Rand gagged and doubled over. His stomach heaved again and again as he vomited into the straw. Finally, he managed to pull himself erect, scrubbing his mouth with his sleeve. His throat felt scraped raw. Slowly, he became aware of the rest of the room, only half seen and not taken in during his hasty search for an attacker. Bloody lumps of flesh lay scattered through the straw. There was nothing he could recognize as human except the two heads. Some of the pieces looked chewed. So that's what happened to the rest of their bodies. He was surprised at the calmness of his thoughts, almost as if he had achieved the void without trying. It was the shock, he knew vaguely. He did not recognize either of the heads. The guards had been changed since he was there earlier. He was glad for that. Knowing who they were, even Changu, would have made it worse. Blood covered the walls, too, but in scrawled letters, single words and whole sentences splashed on every which way. Some were harsh and angular, in a language he did not know, though he recognized Trolloc script. Others he could read and wished he could not. Blasphemies and obscenities bad enough to make a stable hand or a merchant's guard go pale.
Egwene!
Calmness vanished. Shoving his scabbard through his belt, he snatched the lamp from the table, hardly noticing when the heads toppled over.
Egwene! Where are you?
He started toward the inner door, took two steps, and stopped, staring. The words on the door, dark and glistening wetly in the light of his lamp, were plain enough. We will meet again on Toman Head. It is never over, Althor. His sword dropped from a hand suddenly numb. Never taking his eyes off the door, he bent to pick it up. Instead, he grabbed a handful of straw and began scrubbing furiously at the words in the door. Panting, he scrubbed until it was all one bloody smear, but he could not stop.
What do you do?
At the sharp voice behind him, he whirled, stooping to seize his sword. A woman stood in the outer doorway, back stiff with outrage. Her hair was like pale gold in a dozen or more braids, but her eyes were dark and sharp on his face. She looked not much older than he, and pretty in a sulky way, but there was a tightness to her mouth he did not like. Then he saw the shawl she had wrapped tightly around her, with its long red fringe.
Aes Sedai, and light help me, she's Red Aja. It's filthy stuff, vile.
Everything must be left exactly as it is for us to examine. Touch nothing.
She took a step forward, peering at him, and he took one back.
Yes, as I thought. One of those with Moraine. What do you have to do with this?
Her gesture took in the heads on the table and the bloody scrawl on the walls. For a minute, he goggled at her.
Me? Nothing. I came down here to find Egwene.
He turned to open the inner door, and the Aes Sedai shouted,
No! You will answer me!
Suddenly, it was all he could do to stand up, to keep holding the lamp and his sword. Icy cold squeezed at him from all sides. He felt his head caught in a frozen vice. He could barely breathe for the pressure on his chest.
Answer me, boy. Tell me your name.
Involuntarily, he grunted, trying to answer against the chill that seemed to be pressing his face back into his skull, constricting his chest like frozen iron bands. He clenched his jaws to keep the sound in. Painfully, he rolled his eyes to glare at her through a blur of tears.
The light burn you, Aes Sedai. I won't say a word. The shadow take you.
Answer me, boy. Now!
Frozen needles pierced his brain with agony, grated into his bones. The void formed inside him before he even realized he had thought of it. But it could not hold out the pain. Dimly, he sensed light and warmth somewhere in the distance. It flickered queasily, but the light was warm, and he was cold. Distant beyond knowing, but somehow just within reach.
Light so cold, I have to reach. What? She's killing me. I have to reach it, or she'll kill me.
Desperately, he stretched toward the light.
What is going on here?
Abruptly, the cold and the pressure and the needles vanished. His knees sagged, but he forced them stiff. He would not fall to his knees. He would not give her the satisfaction. The void was gone, too, as suddenly as it had come.
She was trying to kill me.
Panting, he raised his head. Moraine stood in the doorway.
I asked what is going on here, Leandrin, she said.
I found this boy here, the Red Aes Sedai replied calmly. The guards are murdered, and here he is, one of yours. And what are you doing here, Moraine? The battle is above, not here.
I could ask the same of you, Leandrin.
Moraine looked around the room with only a slight tightening of her mouth for the charnel.
Why are you here?
Rand turned away from them awkwardly, shoved back the bolts on the inner door, and pulled it open.
Egwene came down here,
he announced for anyone who cared, and went in, holding his lamp high. His knees kept wanting to give way. He was not sure how he stayed on his feet, only that he had to find Egwene.
Egwene!
A hollow gurgle and a thrashing sound came from his right, and he thrust the lamp that way. The prisoner in the fancy coat was sagging against the iron grill of his cell, his belt looped around the bars, and then around his neck. He gave one last kick, scraping across the straw-covered floor, and was still, tongue and eyes bulging out of a face gone almost black. His knees almost touched the floor. He could have stood any time he wanted to. Shivering, Rand peered into the next cell. The big man, with the sunken knuckles, huddled in the back of his cell, eyes as wide as they could open. At the sight of Rand, he screamed and twisted around, clawing frantically at the stone wall.
I won't hurt you, Rand called.
The man kept on screaming and digging. His hands were bloody, and his scrabblings streaked across dark, congealed smears. This was not his first attempt to dig through the stone with his bare hands. Rand turned away, relieved that his stomach was already empty, but there was nothing he could do for either of them.
Egwene!
His light finally reached the end of the cells. The door to Fane's cell stood open, and the cell was empty, but it was the two shapes on the stone in front of the cell that made Rand leap forward and drop to his knees between them. Egwene and Matt lay sprawled, bonelessly, unconscious, or dead. With a flood of relief, he saw their chests rise and fall. There did not seem to be a mark on either of them.
Egwene! Matt!
Setting the sword down, he shook Egwene gently.
Egwene.
She did not open her eyes.
Moraine! Egwene's hurt! And Matt!
Matt's breathing sounded labored, and his face was deathly pale. Rand felt almost like crying.
It was supposed to hurt me. I named the Dark One me.
Do not move them.
Moraine did not sound upset or even surprised. The chamber was suddenly flooded with light as the two Aes Sedai entered. Each balanced a glowing ball of cool light floating in the air above her hand. Leandrin marched straight down the middle of the wide hall, holding her skirts up out of the straw with her free hand, but Moraine paused to look at the two prisoners before following.
There is nothing to do for the one, she said, and the other can wait.
Leandrin reached Rand first and began to bend toward Egwene, but Moraine darted in ahead of her and laid her free hand on Egwene's head.
Leandrin straightened with a grimace. She is not badly hurt, Moraine said after a moment. She was struck here. She traced an area on the side of Egwene's head, covered by her hair. Rand could see nothing different about it. That is the only injury she has taken. She will be all right. Rand looked from one Aes Sedai to the other. What about Matt? Leandrin arched an eyebrow at him and turned to watch Moraine with a wry expression. Be quiet, Moraine said. Fingers still lying on the area where she said Egwene had been hit, she closed her eyes. Egwene murmured and stirred, then lay still.
Is she?
She is sleeping, Rand. She will be well, but she must sleep. Moraine shifted to Matt, but here she only touched him for a moment before drawing back.
This is more serious, she said softly.
She fumbled at Matt's wrist, pulling his coat open, and made an angry sound.
The dagger is gone.
What dagger? Leandrin asked.
Voices suddenly came from the outer room, men exclaiming in disgust and anger.
In here, Moraine called. Bring two litters, quickly.
Someone in the outer room raised a cry for litters.
Thane is gone, Rand said.
The two Aes Sedai looked at him. He could read nothing on their faces. Their eyes glittered in the light.
So I see, Moraine said in a flat voice.
I told her not to come. I told her he was dangerous.
When I came, Leandrin said in a cold voice, he was destroying the writing in the outer chamber.
He shifted uneasily on his knees. The Aes Sedai's eyes seemed alike now. Measuring and weighing him, cool and terrible.
It was filth, he said. Just filth.
They still looked at him, not speaking.
You don't think I... Moraine, you can't think I had anything to do with what happened out there.
Light, did I? I named the Dark One.
She did not answer, and he felt a chill that was not lessened by men rushing in with torches and lamps. Moraine and Leandrin let their glowing balls wink out. The lamps and torches did not give as much light. Shadows sprang up in the depths of the cells. Men with litters hurried to the figures lying on the floor. Ingtar led them. His topknot almost quivered with anger, and he looked eager to find something on which to use his sword.
So the Dark Friend is gone too, he growled. Well, it's the least of what has happened this night.
The least even here, Moraine said sharply. She directed the men putting Egwene and Matt on the litters. The girl is to be taken to her room. She needs a woman to watch in case she wakes in the night. She may be frightened, but more than anything else, she needs sleep now. The boy, she touched Matt as two men lifted his litter and pulled her hand back quickly. Take him to the Amelin Seat's chambers. Find the Amelin wherever she is and tell her he is there. Tell her his name is Matrim Cawthon. I will join her as soon as I am able.
The Amelin, Leandrin exclaimed. You think to have the Amelin as healer for your pet? You are mad, Moraine.
The Amelin Seat, Moraine said calmly, does not share your Red Aja prejudices, Leandrin. She will heal a man without need of a special use for him. Go ahead, she told the litter bearers. Leandrin watched them leave, Moraine and the men carrying Matt and Egwene, then turned to stare at Rand. He tried to ignore her. He concentrated on scabbarding his sword and brushing off the straw that clung to his shirt and breeches. When he raised his head, though, she was still studying him, her face as blank as ice. Saying nothing, she turned to consider the other men thoughtfully. One held the body of the hanged man up, while another worked to unfasten the belt. Ingtar and the others waited respectfully. With a last glance at Rand, she left, head held like a queen. A hard woman, Ingtar muttered, then seemed surprised that he had spoken.
What happened here, Randalthor?
Rand shook his head.
I don't know, except that Fane escaped somehow, and heard Egwene and Matt doing it. I saw the guard room,
he shuddered.
But in here, whatever it was, Ingtar, it scared that fellow bad enough that he hung himself. I think the other one's gone mad from seeing it. We're all going mad tonight.
The Fade, you killed it?
No.
Ingtar slammed his sword into its sheath. The hilt stuck up above his right shoulder. He seemed angry and ashamed at the same time.
It's out of the keep by now, along with the rest of what we could not kill.
At least you're alive, Ingtar. That Fade killed 7 men.
Alive? Is that so important?
Suddenly, Ingtar's face was no longer angry, but tired and full of pain.
We had it in our hands. In our hands, and we lost it, Rand. Lost it!
He sounded as if he could not believe what he was saying.
Lost what? Rand asked.
The horn. The horn of Valyr. It's gone, chest and all.
But it was in the strong room.
The strong room was looted, Ingtar said wearily.
They did not take much, except for the horn. What they could stuff in their pockets. I wish they had taken everything else and left that.
Ronan is dead, and the watchman he had guarding the strong room.
His voice became quiet.
When I was a boy, Ronan held Jahan Tower with 20 men against 1,000 Trollocs. He did not go down easily, though. The old man had blood on his dagger. No man can ask more than that.
He was silent for a moment.
They came in through the dog gate and left the same way. We put an end to 50 or more, but too many escaped. Trollocs! We've never before had Trollocs inside the keep, never!
How could they get in through the dog gate, Ingtar? One man could stop 100 there. And all the gates were barred.
He shifted uneasily, remembering why.
The guards would not have opened it to let anybody in.
Their throats were cut, Ingtar said.
Both good men, and yet they were butchered like pigs. It was done from inside. Someone killed them, then opened the gate. Someone who could get close to them without suspicion. Someone they knew.
Rand looked at the empty cell where Padan Fain had been.
But that means...
Yes, there are dark friends inside Faldara. Or were. We will soon know if that's the case. Kadjin is checking now to see if anyone is missing. Peace. Treachery in Faldara keep.
Scowling, he looked around the dungeon at the men waiting for him. They all had swords, worn over feast day clothes, and some had helmets.
We aren't doing any good here. Out, everyone!
Rand joined the withdrawal. Ingtar tapped Rand's jerkin.
What is this? Have you decided to become a stableman?
It's a long story, Rand said.
Too long to tell here.
Maybe some other time.
Maybe never if I'm lucky. Maybe I can escape in all this confusion.
No, I can't. Not until I know Egwene's all right, and Matt. Light, what will happen to him without the dagger?
I suppose Lord Agomar's doubled the guard on all the gates.
Tripled,
Ingtar said in tones of satisfaction.
No one will pass those gates from inside or out. As soon as Lord Agomar heard what had happened, he ordered that no one was to be allowed to leave the keep without his personal permission.
As soon as he heard.
Ingtar, what about before? What about the earlier order keeping everyone in?
Earlier order?
What earlier order?
Rand, the keep was not closed until Lord Agomar heard of this.
Someone told you wrong.
Rand shook his head slowly.
Neither Ragan nor Tima would have made up something like that. And even if the Amarlin Seat had given the order, Ingtar would have to know of it.
So who? And how?
He glanced sideways at Ingtar, wondering if the Shinarin was lying.
You really are going mad if you suspect Ingtar.
They were in the dungeon guard room now. The severed heads and the pieces of the guards had been removed, though there were still red smears in the table and damp patches in the straw to show where they had been. Two Aes Sedai were there, placid-looking women with brown-fringed shawls, studying the words scrawled on the walls, careless of what their skirts dragged through in the straw. Each had an inkpot in a writing case hung at her belt and was making notes in a small book with a pen. They never even glanced at the men trooping through.
Look here, Varen, one of them said, pointing to a section of stone covered with lines of Trolloc script. This looks interesting.
The other hurried over, picking up reddish stains on her skirt.
Yes, I see. A much better hand than the rest. Not a Trolloc. Very interesting.
She began writing in her book, looking up every so often to read the angular letters on the wall. Rand hurried out. Even if they had not been Aes Sedai, he would not have wanted to remain in the same room with anyone who thought reading Trolloc script written in human blood was interesting.
Ingtar and his men stalked on ahead, intent on their duties. Rand dawdled, wondering where he could go now. Getting back into the women's apartments would not be easy without Egwene to help.
Light let her be all right. Maureen said she'd be all right.
Lan found him before he reached the first stairs leading up.
You can go back to your room if you want, sheepherder. Maureen had your things fetched from Egwene's room and taken to yours.
How did she know?
Maureen knows a great many things, sheepherder. You should understand that by now. You had better watch yourself. The women are all talking about you, staring down the Ammerlin, waving a sword. So they say.
Light, I am sorry they're angry, Lan, but I was invited in. And when I heard the alarm, burn me, Egwene was down here.
Lan pursed his lips thoughtfully. It was the only expression on his face.
Oh, they're not angry, exactly, though most of them think you need a strong hand to settle you down some. Fascinated is more like it. Even the Lady Amalisa can't stop asking questions about you. Some of them are starting to believe the servants' tales. They think you're a prince in disguise, sheepherder. Not a bad thing. There is an old saying here in the Borderlands. Better to have one woman on your side than 10 men. The way they are talking among themselves, they're trying to decide whose daughter is strong enough to handle you. If you don't watch your step, sheepherder, you will find yourself married into a Shinaran house before you realize what has happened. Suddenly he burst out laughing. It looked odd, like a rock laughing. Running through the halls of the women's apartments in the middle of the night wearing a laborer's jerkin and waving a sword. If they don't have you flogged at the very least, they'll talk about you for years. They have never seen a male as peculiar as you. Whatever wife they chose for you, she'd probably have you the head of your own house in 10 years, and have you thinking you had done it yourself besides. It is too bad you have to leave.
Rand had been gaping at the water, but now he growled.
I have been trying. The gates were guarded and no one can leave. I tried while it was still daylight. I couldn't even take Red out of the stable.
No matter now. Maureen sent me to tell you. You can leave any time you want to, even right now. Maureen had Aglamar exempt you from the order.
Why now and not earlier? Why couldn't I leave before? Was she the one who had the gates barred then? Ingtar said he knew nothing about any order to keep people in before tonight.
Rand thought the warder looked troubled, but all he said was,
When someone gives you a horse, sheepherder, don't complain that it isn't as fast as you'd like.
What about Egwene and Matt? Are they really all right? I can't leave until I know they're all right.
The girl is fine. She'll wake in the morning and probably not even remember what happened. Blows to the head are like that.
What about Matt?
The choice is up to you, sheepherder. You can leave now, or tomorrow, or next week. It's up to you.
He walked away, leaving Rand standing there in the corridor deep under Faldara Keep.